Hello, welcome to Off Curve. I'm Wicked Good, and I'm talking to you about Hearthstone as I am driving home from work. It is Thursday, February 20th, 2020. And, jeez, can we turn into the parking lot already? Jeez, come on. Hi. So, as I said last week, it's been kind of a rough month for me on ladder. But it looks, I don't want to jinx anything, but it looks like things might be turning around. So, I've been kind of hard stuck at, like, rank 3, rank 4 for, like, a week and a half. And I haven't been falling too far back. Like, I haven't gone all the way back into 5, thankfully. Because I'm pretty sure I would get stuck in a tilt spiral and have trouble getting out of it. But I've been going dipping deep into 4. I've been getting close to 2. But I haven't really gotten out of that band. And I've been trying a whole bunch of stuff. Been trying Quest Druid, which I've played on stream this past week. I've been playing some Resurrect Priest because it was good against a lot of the aggro. I've been trying a few different things. Part of it's also THL testing, so I'm trying some classes that I want to play. So that kind of, you know, some of that learning part kind of gets, it drags down the win rate a little bit. But, you know, I've been kind of treading water. But obviously, I'm not, you know, last month's early legend kind of set the bar for me a little bit, and I'm not, you know, I'm a little bit frustrated by just treading water, but it's okay, right? Like, it's not like, it's not like I'm just, like, can't win a game. It's like I'm going win one, lose one, win one, lose one. So last night, I saw a tweet from Den, who's a French player and coach for a number of esports team. I forget where he landed. He used to be with Gamers Origin. I forget where he's landed recently, but he was just coaching as a consultant the Crescent Esports as well. And he had posted that another one of his students got to Legend with this Dragon Hunter that he put together that cuts all the snake traps in favor of freezing and runs one big ol' whelp and one tracking. And I've struggled with Dragon Hunter, like, it's been a thing for, like, a week, and I tried it a couple times, and it just never quite worked for me. I mean, I'm not, as you know if you're listening to the show, I'm not exactly the biggest aggro player to begin with, but, I mean, I can pilot an aggro deck. Like, I'm not, like, you know, completely missing that part of my game, but it's just, I would prefer not to, right? Like, I would prefer to be playing a mid-range or a control deck, but I can pilot an aggro deck if I need to. But this one just eluded me for some reason. Like, the pieces never seemed to be coming together, and, like, I could see how it was powerful, but it never quite worked for me. So I'm like, okay, you know what? I've been treading water for a week. Let's just give it a try. It's been one of the higher lists on HS Replay for a while. Let's see how it goes. And it went pretty well. I was at rank 4, 4 stars at like 10 o'clock last night. And then as of right now, I'm at rank 1, 3 stars. With like something like an 80% win rate. I don't want to jinx anything because I'm not a legend yet. And things could turn. Like the deck is definitely being targeted. But it's been kind of absurd how much reach the deck has. And once you start playing it properly, right? Like, I must have been missing something, and I couldn't even really tell you what I was doing wrong before, necessarily. Because I mean, part of it was just that I was probably tilted when I switched to it, and I wasn't necessarily looking at playing it optimally. But, I mean, what you're effectively trying to do with the deck is it is very much an aggro deck in that it has reach, but the sooner you can end the game, the better. And you really do not want to be trading if you don't have to. Like, you do just kind of run out of gas. But you have a lot of reach, especially with the Stormhammer. Like, the Stormhammer in particular is, the way you have to think about it is, like, once you get past, like, turn 4 or so, the Stormhammer is basically develop a minion and then deal 5 damage. You know, as long as they don't have a taunt. There aren't that many taunts in this meta unless you're playing against Priest. But it's basically just, you know, 5 damage every single turn because you'll play a dragon, you'll swing face with the weapon, and then you'll hero power. And, like, you only have to do that 6 times, and that's assuming you don't actually stick a minion, which you're going to, right? Like, it runs the Fellwing that I forget what there's Evasive Feywing and I think it's Furious Feywing. Like, those names are too similar and it's annoying. But the one, that's the one that gets cheaper with damage you do to your opponent's face. So, like, a common play is, like, on the coin would be, like, turn one, coin Face Stalker. Turn two, hero power, pull out a freezing trap, hit face, play a Feywing, and now all of a sudden it's turn two, and you've got a 2-3 and a 3-3, and you've got a freezing trap to prevent the first minion that your opponent tries to attack with from hitting it. So, like, that's a lot of pressure you can put together, and, like, if you're, but you also do need to be focusing on why you're trading, and you have to have a very good reason to be trading. Like, if you're value trading with this deck, you're probably losing, and that was probably what I was doing. Because if you value trade too much, you just run out of stuff. Like, your damage really does need to go face. You can use the Corrosive Breath to remove and do damage at the same time. And also, like, the scale riders, you know, are more face damage, and you kind of need to be pressing your button every turn after turn three or four. And a lot of it is also kind of like counting down from how much damage how much life your opponent has left. This is a common trick with aggro decks to kind of help you get a little bit better at it. Not that I'm an expert at it or anything, but, like, one of the things that you kind of need to figure out is, okay, they're at X life. How much damage do I have? How much damage do I have on board? How much damage do I have in hand? How many times do I need to make sure to press the hero power to get over the line? And part of that is just kind of hoping they don't find a taunt or healing or whatever. But if you're kind of figuring that out and figuring out how much damage you have and how much damage you need, then a lot of it kind of falls into place. Like, it helps your game plan. Like, you really do need to... I've talked a couple times recently about having a plan and knowing, like, how you want your next couple of turns to go. And that's really important with a deck like this. Like, this is not a deck where you can be playing for the current turn and expect to win. You really need to be looking, like, 2 to 3 turns ahead. Like, what is your game plan? How are you assembling? Like, how much damage do you need? How are you assembling that? And then planning out your turns accordingly. And a lot of that usually means that you're prioritizing pressing the button over playing another minion or playing a less expensive minion and hero powering rather than playing the big minion. It also is worth remembering that you can swing once with the Stormhammer without breaking it. And, like, recognizing how to order your damage too. Like, one of the things that I've noticed is more important. Like, you have a number of damage you can do from hand in terms of, like, you have 2 life drinkers, you have 2 scale riders that can go over taunts. So there are some times where, say, you might want to play a Leroy a little before you have lethal, because if your opponent plays taunt, you're done. I mean, I guess you could use the Leroy to trade through it, but you'd rather get that damage in and then, you know, use the rest of it, assuming that you will have the rest of it between your hero power and the stuff that goes face over taunts to finish off. So, like, those types of things, like prioritizing which threats you're going to play when, prioritizing which dragons you're going to play on what turns, you know, determining if you can afford to swing with the hammer and waste a charge. There's, like, a lot of little decisions, but the games are very, very fast. Like, the games are usually over by, like, turn 6 or 7, so if you're, like, strapped for time, like, you can fit a lot of games in. And once you start getting into the groove of it, it starts to become pretty natural, at least for me it did. So, I mean, we'll see. I've been here before on the cusp and then fallen back out and then had to climb up with something else. But I'm pretty optimistic with how this has been going. And, like, even the bad matchups are not that bad. Because sometimes you can just, like, get a whole bunch of damage and just get rid of it anyway. Like, I had one game this morning where I was playing against a rogue and I had enough damage for over two turns, but I miscalculated that I needed to have a dragon in hand for the last 2 points of damage from a scale rider, but then I was able to just track into a Leroy. Like, you have so much damage that it's a little bit forgiving in that way, but you do need to be kind of planning ahead in a macro level to be able to forgive some of those mistakes in a micro level. But I would say if you're frustrated, I would say try it, especially at lower ranks. Like, it the games go fast, so even if you're going to lose, you can make that game back up quickly. And, like, I had a couple people just auto-concede. Just because, like, I'm not dealing with this. Which I'm not against. Like, I'm fine with that. So, you know, it's worth trying. And if you haven't had success, maybe try this version and see if that works a little bit better for you. So, what I want to talk about this week is, it seems like we should be getting an announcement about the next standard year very soon. They've been having a series of Hearthstone summits in Anaheim this week. They've been bringing in waves of content creators and streamers to brief them on what the next standard year is going to be like. And then we've been getting a lot of vague tweets from those folks about how excited they are about the new year, but they can't say anything. So I would imagine that we're probably, like, based on the way that the calendar's typically gone over the last couple of years, we're going to hear, like, a year of the whatever announcement probably next week, followed by them starting to tease and then reveal the new expansion in the first or second week of March. So with the new standard year comes Hall of Fame rotations. And so one of the things that I like to do generally before those come out is kind of talk about the cards that I would like to see go to the Hall of Fame with some reasoning behind it. Now, it's important to remember, like, why do cards go to the Hall of Fame? And the cards do not go to the Hall of Fame necessarily for the power level of the current decks. Sometimes they do. Like, Baku and Gen were a good example of that, where it's just like, they really can't do anything to bring the power level down, and that's all we're going to see for the next year. But, you know, very often what they're doing when they move things to the Hall of Fame is they're addressing future design constraints. So, like, one example would be Mind Blast. Like, Mind Blast didn't get rotated out at a standard year change, but it did get rotated out soon afterwards, and I would be willing to bet that the reason that had to go to the Hall of Fame was because they had just developed Fate Weaver, which is the 4-mana 3/6 dragon for priest that discounts your hand by one if you've invoked twice. So I would imagine that they saw Mind Blast Priest coming back in a big way, because then all you have to do is hit, like, Velen and two Mind Blasts with one of those in hand, and then all of a sudden you have 20 damage from hand, right? Because you have Velen, and especially, it's even more if you have Vivid Nightmare. Because, like, Velen's 7, each Mind Blast is 2, so you have 6-1-1, and then you have a Vivid Nightmare, which is 3. So if you get all those in your hand, and then you have Fate Weaver, then you can do 40 from hand. And I'm sure that they did not want that to happen. So generally what they're doing is they're addressing future design constraints, or just things that we've seen too much, right? Like, Ragnaros and Sylvanas are an example of that, where they were just kind of, like, the best cards in that slot, and they kind of had to go to make deck building a little bit more open, because they were just overriding whatever went into that mana slot. So it's with an eye towards that, not knowing anything about what they're developing, but just kind of knowing, like, where they're starting to run up against the walls, that I want to talk about, like, some of those things, like, why there are certain cards that kind of need to go, and what they could be choking out. So we're going to start the list with my famous anti-rogue bias, my anti-rogue and anti-hunter bias, but anti-rogue in this case. Edwin Van Cleef is kind of need to be on the top of the list at this point. Like, Edwin somehow has avoided all of the nerfs that have been made to Rogue's Classic Kit, and Rogue Classic Kit is very, very good, which is why Rogue is consistently, like, in the meta conversation no matter what, because the cards that they have from Classic are generally so good, and they've been hit with the nerf hammer several times. Especially at the beginning of last standard year, when a lot of stuff rotated out, and you had a bunch of Rogue Classic cards, and then Waggle Pick and Raiding Party, and then we all know how that turned out. Edwin somehow escaped all of that, and I've been wondering if that means that he's just going to the Hall of Fame, because, like, the problem with Edwin is that it basically results in non-games more often than not. It's not as bad as it used to be. It used to be with Gadgets and Auctioneer and Counterfeit Coins and stuff, you could make a pretty big Edwin. But even now, even with, like, Spirit of the Shark and stuff like that, or even with all the lackeys, you can generally make a 10-10 or a 12-12 pretty easily. And sometimes, like, way bigger than that. And it's the kind of card that you can bring out very, very early. Sometimes, like, turn 2, you can get an 8-8 with the right circumstances. And it's just, it makes those games feel like one player didn't get to play. And that's fine, right? Like, Rogue has had that as part of its kit. That's been kind of a part of the appeal of the class. But it's also kind of getting old, you know? And it there are enough games that are decided by that, where you either have an answer for Edwin or you just lose on the spot, that maybe it's time for that to go. Like, we're still going to have a lot of cheap spells. Like, Rogue is going to have lackeys with us for the next year. And I would presume that they're going to want to be creating, like, more interesting combo cards and ways to reward, you know, doing more things in a turn. Like, the card that draws you a card for every card you played that turn is a good example. But, like, those are always going to get choked out by Edwin, because Edwin is just that powerful. And I think, I don't know if it was true for this past year, but there was some stat that, like, Edwin's, like, one of the only cards that was in, like, every world championship lineup from, like, the beginning to now. I don't know if that was true for last year or not. But even when it seems like Edwin's going to be bad, Edwin never seems to be bad. And, like, we have multiple cards now that will give you several cards for free. And that, Edwin can be one of those. And those games just kind of, again, feel bad. And I mean, you can deal with it, right? Like, there are ways to answer it. I'm not saying it's insurmountable. But I would imagine for less invested players, that could even be an exit point, right? Like, you just get blown out by, like, a turn two 10-10. And, like, well, what am I supposed to do with that, right? So I think that all the effects that are making free cards between, like, Dragon Queen Alexstrasza and Galakrond kind of feel like it might be a last hurrah for Edwin. And I think I would be okay with that. Like, I think we need, like, Rogue has enough powerful things that they can do with combos and doing, like, ridiculous amount of stuff in a turn that they don't need a 12-12 on top of it. So, In fairness, I'll talk about a priest card too, which is Divine Spirit. Divine Spirit needs to go, and they've talked about this, and they've said that it probably does merit consideration for the next Hall of Fame rotation. I think it really is something that does need to go, and you could make a case for Divine Spirit or Inner Fire, and I'm going to make the case for Divine Spirit for this reason, right? The priest canonical class identity, it never really plays out like this, but the way that the class identity for priest is supposed to play out is that it's supposed to be based around buffing the health of minions and then keeping them alive with the hero power, right? Like, the healing hero power only does so much for your face, and really the way that you're supposed to be abusing that, and this is how it kind of plays out in Arena, is that you get minions that have big butts, and then you make those butts bigger, and then you use those to value trade and then heal up so they can do that repeatedly and use that to keyboard. That's the way that priest is supposed to work. It never really works that way, because the priest minions that get played are either ones that are intended to come back as resurrected, or they're getting so big because you have inner fire and you want to hit your opponent in the face for 30. And if that really is priest's class identity, right? If part of priest's class identity is taking medium-sized minions and making them bigger and then hitting your opponent with them, there has to be a payoff for that. Because that's not a game plan you can win with on your own, right? Like, you can't just keep chipping away at your opponent for 2 damage while you're value trading off their minions. They will eventually be able to deal with that, which is where Inner Fire comes in. Now, Inner Fire takes that investment that you've put into that minion and pays it off, right? So you've put 2 Power Word Shields on a Cartouche Defender, so now you've got a 3-8, now you can turn into an 8-8 and turn it into a weapon, right? Like, it's a payoff for all that investment that you put into that weapon. The problem with Divine Spirit is that makes it way too easy to do that all in one turn and then kill your opponent right off the bat, and makes every minion a threat for lethal, which is not a fun play pattern. Because Divine Spirit isn't looking at an investment over time where you're investing a lot of these, like, Power Word Shield and Temple Enforcer. I know nobody plays Temple Enforcer, but I'm thinking of some of the base classic cards that buff health, or maybe, like, an Extra Arms or something like that. And then it takes that and just says, okay, well, as long as you can double it and get it to 30, then you win the game. Because it does it all at once. And ideally, it should be rewarding you for having invested in that minion over time. But realistically, what it does is you're playing minions that have big butts to start with, and then you're just doubling them twice with two Divine Spirits, then hitting them with Inner Fire and winning the game. And the Inner Fire would be, well, probably not played if we're being honest, but it would be a much more reasonable card if Divine Spirit was not with it, right? Like, you never see those two cards played separately. And you probably would just never see Inner Fire again, which would be not great, but it wouldn't be as... We wouldn't have this kind of OTK combo priest pattern, which is just not a lot of fun to play with or against. And again, it's a deck that we've had forever. This has been a deck that's been in the meta for a very long time. As soon as you get a critical mass of things that that synergize with healing and big butts, then all of a sudden Divine Spirit comes back into the meta again. And then we've had it with Wall Priest. Before that, we had like a dragon combo priest. Now we have, you know, it's not really in the meta as much, but it's still viable, like this Nefertiti Ritualist combo priest. And all of that is because of Divine Spirit. If you did not have Divine Spirit, those decks would not be viable. And I think that it's got to be preventing them from printing buff cards that would play into that class identity. Right? Like, you can't print a buff card. Like, look what happened with Extra Arms. That was just enough when they buffed that and made it 2 mana. Like, Combo Priest is off to the races. Right? So as soon as you start printing any significant buffs like that, then all of a sudden your Divine Spirit and you're firing people and everybody's sick of it. If you take away Divine Spirit, you can probably print more of those buff cards and make it a little bit more interesting. And maybe you can print more things like Lady in White, but not terrible. That can pay off that investment in minions without actually just being an oppressive one-turn kill where your opponent needs to remove every minion or else they just die. So I think it has to. I don't know what the hell they're going to do because Priest really does not have much going on in the base set, though. I think the Year of the Dragon gave it enough tools so they can probably build on that something for now. But Divine Spirit just needs to go already. I mean, we lost Mind Blast for the same reason. I mean, the Mind Blast would have been an OTK. I think Divine Spirit needs to go, and we need to start coming up with other ways to give Priest something to do other than just, like, resurrecting Cartoon Defenders. This next one is kind of not as oppressive as the others and probably is not as big of a deal, but I think is kind of a quality of life thing that we could rotate it to the Hall of Fame and kind of just make things better in the short term, which is Nosdormu, like the original one. And this is a card that I never really thought I would be complaining about until Ysera Unleashed was printed. And there are just things like that where, and if you've never gotten Ysera off of a, or gotten Nosdormu off of a Ysera portal, generally what happens is that it will register as having put the Nosdormu into play and before you get a chance to even see all the dragons that come out. So you've probably just lost your entire turn as soon as that happens. And it can happen regardless of which side of the board the Nosdormu is on. And it can be a very frustrating thing. And it's just the kind of thing that just feels very out of place with the rest of the game. Right? Like, we don't have anything like Nosdormu. We've never really had anything like Nosdormu. And it's never, like, what you want it to be, right? Like, there's no real purpose to put Nosdormu in your deck. It always comes off of, like, random effects, and then it's a weird thing, but it's like, so out of character with the rest of all of the other cards that are printed. Like, nothing else, like, hurries your turn like that, and it really does punish people on mobile. It punishes people with weak internet connections, and it just never feels good. And it just doesn't need to be there, right? Like, it doesn't really serve any purpose. There's not... People have tried to use it as a tech card, but it never really works out that way. And, like, it's not helping anybody. And it does create these frustrating game-breaking scenarios where it comes into effect with, like, slow animations, and then all of a sudden, it's game-breaking. It's deciding the game a lot of the time in a way that just doesn't feel... It doesn't feel right. So, I think because nobody would really miss Nosdormu, like, I think it's probably reasonable just to rotate it. If you still want to play something with it, like, go ahead and do that in Wild. Like, Wild's going to be a much more hardcore audience anyway. But, like, I don't think anybody's going to cry any tears for Nosdormu if it goes away. And that's probably fine. So, let's talk about another priest card, which this is going to make me a little bit more upset, but I think we need to talk about it, which is Northshire Cleric. As my good friend Ridiculous Hat says very often, don't get too very attached to your class 1-mana 1/3s. And I think this is, like, the last one standing. We've had a number of, like, 1-mana 1/3s. Mana Worm, particularly, is, like, kind of the most notable example. And this is another one that's a very powerful ability in Priest. And it's, like, especially if we're getting rid of Divine Spirit in order to make room for more buff cards, then this becomes very problematic. And this was extremely problematic when Extra Arms was 2-mana, because you were able to play it and then immediately buff it, and then all of a sudden you have a 3/5 that can trade, and that's going to stay alive a lot longer than a 1/3. And then you start just snowballing card advantage, and it becomes very unfair. And you know, a lot of the powerful effects in Hearthstone, typically, like, the way that the balance has shifted over the last couple of years, like, a lot of the really powerful effects in Hearthstone are ones that you can answer, right? Like, you have a chance to answer them. And Northshire Cleric, you don't really. I mean, you have to deal with it on one or else your opponent starts buffing it, and then you can't really do much to it. And, like, once you start buffing a Northshire Cleric, it gets very hard to deal with, and then games just snowball right off the bat. So, I think, again, if you're removing this much from Priest, you're going to have some sort of a game plan to bring Priest back up, because Priest does not have a very strong classic and basic set to begin with. And taking away two of its major pieces, like, this is, I think, like, one of the only, like, class minions that Priest has in the basic set. I think the other one is Temple Enforcer, and the rest of them are spells. So, like, you would need to replace it with something that's not, like, Radiance, right? Like, it would need to be something that's, like, a little bit better than that. Just so that Priest isn't starting the dumpster at every beginning of every year. But Northshire Cleric probably needs some attention at this point. Like, again, Priest was so bad when Combo Priest was around that at least it was making Priest playable, so they probably were willing to just, like, ignore it for the time being. And Combo Priest is, it's still a viable deck, but it's not what it was, like, in the height of the Yldoom era. So they probably just left it around just to let Priest stay playable, but Northshire Cleric probably also just needs to go. But again, we need some sort of a rework to Priest, because I'm not happy about making these recommendations, I assure you. Like, the Priest is going to get a lot worse if they bring either of those to the Hall of Fame, and they need to accompany that with some sort of a rework of the Priest class to keep it from just being completely 100% dependent on expansion content just to be playable. So there's a couple more cards that I'm just going to touch on, because I talked about them extensively last year, and I don't think that much has changed. If anything, you know, we've seen things not be as catastrophic, obviously, as they seemed like they might be last year, but it's still worth mentioning them. Gadgetzan Auctioneer is a card that is kind of always on the edge. It's definitely keeping a lot of cheap spells, especially for Rogue, from being printed, clearly. And I'm pretty nervous about how much Chef Nomi we're going to see in a 4-set meta once we rotate a bunch of stuff out. Maybe it won't be that bad, because we're still going to have all the Galakrond nonsense in the Highlander decks, and it's not going to be... and we're not really losing all that much from the rotation, but even so, right? Like, They've printed a lot of cheap spells, like Radiance and the zero mana get a lackey card for Priest, and you've gotten like a twin spell draw card for Druid, and Druid's already got a bunch of cheap stuff, and especially with Moonfires and Innervates, and you know, there's always kind of like this critical mass where you get too many cheap cards and Gadget and Auctioneer starts to become an issue. Now, we don't necessarily... I mean, Chef Nomi is going to be the payoff. Like, Mechathune had been the payoff in the past, and that's a little bit harder to do since Naturalize went away. But Chef Nomi decks could legitimately be a thing. And they're going to be annoying if we keep Gadgetzan around. And it just feels like, you know, there's never... Like, outside of maybe Rogue players, like, nobody's ever happy to see Gadgetzan Auctioneer, right? Like, do you ever, like, not roll your eyes when you see Gadgetzan Auctioneer at the table? So, you know, that's probably a card that could go away. Malygos is another one that I do wonder, like, Warlock with Malygos and Nether Breath and Soulfire was, like, almost there until it was just, like, not quite good enough. But again, in a four-set meta, those types of things will be viable, and Frizz is making Malygos viable with multiple cheap spells that can go phase. So... is that something that we need to have around? Like, we've already seen Malygos Druid become in and out of the meta again, even after Twig of the World Tree went away. Like, it hasn't been quite as good, but there was a period of time where people were trying that pretty seriously with Elise. Especially once Elise changed the order in which she brings back doubled spells. We will lose Dream Petal Florist, so maybe that makes it a little bit less viable. But, you know, maybe you try to high roll with the Frizz, or you use something to plot twist it back into the deck if you're Warlock or something. I don't know. But, again, Malygos is one of those cards that, like, it's never really there for good. And it's going to be keeping... like, the teams clearly wanted to start printing cheap face spells again. And Malygos is always kind of the constraint to that. Maybe it's a good thing. Maybe it's good that Malygos is there to keep them from printing too many cheap face spells. But... you know, there's even without that, like, there are enough games that are just decided with Malygos coming off of a Dream Portal from Musera Unleashed that it's probably not a great thing to have in the game for too much longer anyway. And then Mind Control Tech is just kind of always there. And again, we're going to have the quest in Shaman. It's not good right now. It could be once some stuff rotates out. And it feels like the kind of thing that punishes you for doing what you want to do, which is play, which is what, or what the team wants you to do, which is play an honest game with minion combat. But when you do that, and then you get punished by Mind Control Tech, like it's one of those things that it's a weird thing to have in the game, and it feels outdated at this point. Like, it feels like a very draconian, high risk, high reward type of tech card that you know, do we need it? Right? Like, that was definitely, like, the reason that Quest Shaman was so good, one of the reasons, was that if you were trying to fight it back on board, especially when Evolve was a thing, then you just get punished by, like, Mind Control getting doubled. So, again, it's a low priority right now, but it's one of those cards that, do we really need it anymore? Like, maybe we could try not having it in Standard. And... this is going to be the last one, and I'm not sure, I don't think both these cards need to go, but I think one of them does. And we're going to talk about the elephant in the room, which is Leroy Jenkins, and my proverbial white whale, which is Shadowstep. I am not as much as I joke about hashtag nerf Shadowstep, which used to be like a legitimate crusade for me back when Quest Rogue was a thing. It's not as much anymore. Now it's kind of just like a running joke. But I think that Shadowstep, again, given the kinds of rogues that we have and what they're doing, like, Shadowstep feels like it's a little bit too much. Like, Rogue has already got basically infinite value from all of the lackeys that it generates, and then all of the battle cries that it generates. And yeah, we got Boom Pistol Bully. That's not really enough, but one way that you would bring some of the power level of that deck down is to make it so that you can't replay those battle cries for cheaper. Like, and this is where Leroy comes in, right? Because, like, I think Leroy on its own is probably fine. It does enable some stupid stuff, like people were trying, like, the Leroy, Grave Rune, OTK, and Priest. And there's always kind of a, you know, a danger zone when you're dealing with a charge minion. But I think that having burst damage as a finisher is probably okay. And, I mean, it's, I don't want to go down the whole iconic character road. Because, like, there's a lot of iconic characters that we've rotated the Hall of Fame. Ragnaros and Sylvanas being among them. So I don't think that that really fits in, like, flavor-wise. I don't think it matters if the card was overpowered. But I think the card by itself is probably okay, but some of the ways that it gets abused, not so much. And I think that, again, if we're looking at Rogue, and we're looking at Galakrond Rogue in particular, which is a deck that maybe is not as oppressive as it was, like, two or three weeks ago, but is still, like, one of the best decks in the meta, and doesn't really lose much, if anything, when we get to rotation. Like, having the whole Leroy Shadow Step lethal, which was the original reason that Leroy got nerfed, by the way. Like, Leroy, if you haven't been playing for a long time, like, Leroy used to cost 4 mana. And it used to be that you could Leroy and double Shadow Step and hit somebody for 18 in one turn. And then they made it 5 mana, so at least you'd only do that twice. But sometimes Leroy costs 0. And, or sometimes you get extra Shadow Steps from Ethereal Lackey. And that's when it starts to feel very unfair. If you could only play Leroy once, right, then that's not terrible. Like, it's 6 damage from hand. It's not the end of the world. Aggro decks need a way to finish the game. It's and it's kind of a good first legendary for players to craft. It's when Leroy represents 12 to 18 damage that things start getting weird, right? Like, a card that is so broken that they won't let Zephyrus cast it is probably something that we should be considering to move out of standard. Like, you know, like there are a number of situations where you just get Shadow Stepped, or you're Shadow Stepping a Lackey to be able to play Togwaggle earlier, right? Like, there's a lot of situations there where Shadow Step, I mean, you know, cards should be powerful, right? Like, I'm not saying that we shouldn't have powerful cards. I feel like Shadow Step is the kind of card that exposes how close to the line the design team goes and generally makes it feel broken. Like, we've seen that with Tempo Rogue way back when we were Shadow Stepping Kel'Seth. We saw that with Quest Rogue when we were completing the quest on, like, turn 5. And now we're seeing that in Galakrond Rogue, where we're Shadow Stepping Leroy again, or we're Shadow Stepping some of the lackeys to make Togwaggle come out faster to be able to draw more free cards, or drawing even more free cards, or those types of things. And I think that Shadow Step's kind of the through line. Like, if you take Shadow Step out of Galakrond Warrior, it starts to feel a lot more fair, which is why the Galakrond Warrior, one of the reasons that it's generally better than the Highlander Warriors, you just have more consistency there and you can do more things like that. So I don't think that, I wouldn't be upset if it doesn't go to the Hall of Fame, but I wouldn't be upset if it did. And because honestly, we need to do something to shake up this meta once we get to rotation. I think that's something that I'm really interested to hear what they're going to do. Because last year, that thing was, we need to rotate Genin Baku a little bit early. This year, we're going to have the same problem with a lot of these cards, because the year of the Raven was so weak. And I'm going through and kind of collecting a list of cards that are going to rotate out. And there's not a lot that's going to make that much of a difference, to be honest. Like, Ziliax is a big one. And there are some impactful cards, but, like, a lot of the decks that we're playing right now, like, it feels a lot like the end of Kobolds and Catacombs, where we were looking at the meta and looking at what was rotating out, and, like, it was like, well, Pirate Warrior loses a card, and Q-Block loses basically nothing, and Dude Paladin turned into Even Paladin, or I forget if it was Even Paladin or Odd Paladin that was first, one of them, they both saw a lot of play, but, I mean, at the end of the day, it was, I think it was Even Paladin that was first, And we thought it was going to be Dude Paladin, and then it turned out it was Even Paladin because it just got better when you put in Gen. But it's still a very powerful deck, right? So I don't see how much the meta is going to change when we rotate stuff out like it did at the beginning of last year. So something major is going to have to change, and I wonder if it does have to be like Hall of Fame changes in order for that to happen. Or maybe it's going to be more Classic nerfs. I don't know. But even the Classic cards don't feel like they're that much of the problem outside of maybe Rogue. So, but Shadow Step seems to be a card that's been just flying under the radar. And I think it lets them leave Leeroy in. Because I think Leeroy is good both from the perspective of gameplay, like having that aggro tool, and also having like a card that is brings casual players in. Like, I know we're not at the point where we're trying to really grow the game anymore, but there's always going to be like players that they're going to want to be bringing into the game, right? And Leeroy is a familiar face for that, and like Leeroy Jenkins is kind of just like a known character, and Leeroy I don't feel like is the problem. But Shadow Stepping Leeroy is. So I think if you're going to remove one of those, you probably want to remove Shadow Step just because it's enabled so many broken or broken feeling things or feels bad things over the course of the last couple of years of Standard that it's probably worth investigating whether that's a card that we need to have in Standard anymore. All right, so that was a lot. It was probably a little bit longer than I was expecting to go, but I also was driving all the way home from work today, so that's going to happen. As always, you can find the show notes for this show and every show at offcurve.com, which is also where you can find my Masters Tour meta dashboards at offcurve.com/masterstour. You can follow me on Twitch, twitch.offcurve.com. I stream almost every Monday, 8 p.m. Eastern. So you can catch me then. You can join our Discord, which has got a lovely group of people who are always friendly and happy to engage in conversation at discord.offcurve.com. You can follow the show's account on Twitter at offcurve. You can follow my account on Twitter at wickedgood. And there's probably some other stuff that I'm forgetting, but that's good enough for now. So thank you as always for listening. I know you have a lot of places where you can be putting your podcast listening time, and I appreciate you taking the time to spend it with me on my drive home from work talking about Hearthstone and nerfing Shadow Step and other tilting at windmills. So good luck to you. Good luck in your you know, whatever goals you're trying to accomplish before the end of the month. Good luck in that final push, and be good to each other. We'll talk soon. Have a good one.